All right, well, good morning. My name is David Suchoff. I'm a PhD student at NC State University. I work with grafted cucurbits and grafted tomatoes. This study was one we conducted during my master's, looking at grafted tomatoes and their response to nitrogen. So just a little history of herbaceous grafting. Talking about grafting horticulturally, herbaceous grafting is relatively new. It was developed in the 1920s with grafted cucurbits, and this was done in Asia. And then it wasn't until the 1960s that tomatoes were grafted commercially. Once again, this was conducted in Asia. Herbaceous grafting has been much more widely adopted in Asian, European, and some North African countries, due in part by the limited arable land and the much more intensive management practices, as well as the relatively inexpensive labor to conduct the grafting process year after year after year. In North America, grafting has been a little bit slow as far as being adopted. That being said, probably within the past two decades, there have been a lot of interest, especially in grafted tomatoes, due in part by dwindling farmland, increase in organic production, as well as the banning of methyl bromide and the overall logistics of having to fumigate soils. So that being said, the number one benefit of the use of grafted tomatoes is disease resistance. There have been numerous studies looking at different rootstocks and the different common soil-borne pathogens that can be managed with these rootstocks. This was a picture taken in 2013. This is bacterial wilt in a farmer's field in North Carolina. Just devastating. And so these are fumigated fields, and he wanted to use grafted tomatoes. So in a field adjacent to this one, he planted grafted plants, and you could see it's like night and day. That being said, there have also been some other added benefits to grafting, specifically this increase in vigor, both vegetatively and as far as yield is concerned. We see that plants are bushier, there's an increase in leaf area, as well as a significant increase in yield depending on the rootstock. A lot of researchers hypothesize that this increase in vigor may be due in part to nitrogen use efficiency. So talking a little bit about nitrogen, at least in our area, it's more commonly applied as nitrate, which is mobile in the soil solution. And because of that, it's very easily leached out of the soil, which has very strong environmental effects. This picture is showing this huge dead zone we have now in the Gulf of Mexico, due in part to leaching out of fertilizers. But not only that, it's very expensive to apply nitrogen, and the cost of nitrogen is continually rising. So to have crops that are more nitrogen use efficient, we can reduce the amount of nitrogen that's leached away, as well as reduce the amount of money needed to apply this nitrogen. So that being said, there's been one study conducted in Florida, and I'll be coming back to this study, in which the authors looked at some tomato rootstocks and different application rates of nitrogen, and they did find a significant interaction in one of the 2 years. So with this in mind, we want to conduct a similar study. It's an open field study, and we want to determine if rootstocks improve yield and nitrogen use. So we conducted this study in the Sandhills, which is about an hour and 20 minutes southwest of Raleigh. We chose this site because it's got very, very deep, nutrient-poor Kander sands, and we conducted this in 2013 and 2014. As far as the varieties used, we used Tribute, which is a determinate salad variety. This was our non-grafted control, as well as the Scion for our two rootstocks. We used RST-106, which is a relatively, it's not very vigorous, but it's resistant to bacterial wilt. And then we also used Maxifort. Maxifort is very commonly used, and it's an extremely vigorous rootstock. We changed the design up between both years slightly. In 2013, it was a split plot design. We had two true replications. Each replication had five treatment rows, and these five treatment rows each had their own nitrogen treatment. Within the replication, we had two subsamples, and the subsamples were made up of three 5-meter plots, or 5-meter plots, with a 1.2-meter buffer between each of these. And within each of the plots, we had eight of the different grafted or non-grafted treatments at a 0.6-meter spacing. So as far as fertigation goes, we used a 1900 ammonium nitrate, and we based our rates off of the recommended rate for the southeast of 224 kilograms per hectare, and then we went from there and reduced it down by 25%, all the way down to a zero rate which the plants were receiving no nitrogen at all. So this is what the study looked like in 2013. 2013 was a lot cooler and wetter than normal. You can see the fertigation header was up at the front of the field. Now in 2014 we changed it up. We wanted to get more statistical power. So we ran the header down the center of the field and we got four true replications. Spacing and everything else was the same. And this is the field in 2014. 2014 was much, much drier and much hotter. And you can see as well that the fertigation header is now down the center of the field. As far as data collection goes, we looked at plant height over time, and then we looked at yield. As far as yield goes, we had three grades, and these were based off of the USDA standards. What we called a jumbo was anything greater than 7.3 centimeters in fruit diameter. A medium was anything between 4.8 and 7.3 centimeters. And then culls were anything smaller than 4.8 or anything that was damaged due to insect or rot. And we picked once a week at the sign of first breaker stage. And so what we looked at was the fruit count per grade as well as the fruit weight per grade. So getting right into the results, I should go ahead and say that we didn't find any nitrogen by grafted treatment or rootstock interaction in any of the measurements I'll be discussing today. But we did find a lot of significant main effects. So looking at plant height, what we're seeing here is plant height over time. MT is our max support rootstock with Tribute Scion. RT is the RST-106 rootstock with the Tribute Scion, and T is our control non-grafted. The asterisks indicate statistical differences or significant differences at that day. However, overall what we're seeing is there's not a huge difference between height. For example, if we look at 42 days after transplant in 2013, while it was significant, Maxafort rootstock was only taller by about 4 to 5 centimeters. And if you look in the literature, you find a lot of the same, in which you don't necessarily see an increase in plant height due to grafting, but what you do see is an increase in plant bushiness, I guess you'll say. The plants are bushier, the leaf area is greater with these more vigorous rootstocks like Maxafort. And while we didn't measure this, we did notice this in the field. So on the left, we have a picture of Tribute, and this is receiving no nitrogen at all. And then on the right, we have Tribute on Maxafort, once again, no nitrogen. And you can see the plants just look more full than the non-grafted Tribute, while the plant height is not necessarily that much taller. Now, getting right into our yield data, first starting off with the medium fruit count. In 2013, we didn't see any significant differences, though Maxafort tended to yield a little bit more medium fruit per hectare. However, in 2014, we do see that significant difference where both rootstocks performed better than the non-grafted Tribute. Similarly, if we look at the weight of these medium fruit, we see that there's no statistical difference in 2013. However, in 2014, both rootstocks yielded heavier medium fruit. Looking at jumbo fruit, we have a very big difference between years. In 2013, we don't see a difference, but once again, Maxafort tended to have more jumbo fruit per hectare than both the RST-106, which is about intermediate, and then the Tribute, which is lower. However, in 2014, we see that the rootstocks did perform better. This yearly difference is due in part A by the climate. It was much, much harsher in 2014, and also due to a little bit of a lack of communication, and potassium was not added in 2014. Now, looking at jumbo fruit weight, this is a little interesting. We didn't see that statistical difference or significant difference in the jumbo fruit number in 2013. However, in 2014, we do. And what that may indicate is that while the number of fruit might not be that different, the actual size of the jumbo fruit coming off of these Maxafort rootstocks may be heavier than those of the RST-106 rootstock or the Tribute rootstock. And we do see the same exact trend in 2014 with Maxafort having the heavier jumbo fruit. Now, going into marketable yield we defined as the combination of both the medium and the jumbo fruit. First, looking at the main effect of nitrogen, which was significant. In 2013, it's hard to see, but the RST-106 rootstock and the Tribute control were exactly the same. So you're only really seeing one line there. However, at every level of nitrogen, we see Maxafort yielded significantly more. Looking at 2014 now, we do see more of a separation. Once again, though, the Tribute non-grafted was lower. The RST-106 rootstock in the middle, and then the Maxifort yielding the most at every level of nitrogen. Now, when we fit this data, we first tried to fit it with a quadratic equation, but the best fit was a linear regression. And in a study that was published in 2015, looking at nitrogen crop use in grafted tomatoes as well, this is coming out of Florida, they found that the response was best fit with a linear plateau or a quadratic plateau. So that is, you know, in the linear plateau, you see this linear increase in yield, and then it starts to flatten off, whereas the quadratic, it's more of a quadratic and then flattens off, which is what you might usually see. We didn't see that with ours, and I believe that has to do with the fact that we didn't hit what's called the nitrogen crop nutritional requirements. In this 2015 paper, they found that for grafted plants, it was between about 238 and 242 kilograms per hectare. And if you all remember, we were below that as far as our 100% rating. So we probably should have added a little bit more nitrogen to get to that peak and then plateau. Now, coming back to the main effect of rootstock, looking at marketable yield, in both years we see that Maxifort yielded significantly more than the tribute control, with the RC106 rootstock being intermediate to the two, although there was no significant difference between the control in 2013. So we didn't see any of these rootstock by nitrogen rate interactions, but that Maxifort yielded about 30% more than the tribute with RST106 being intermediate to the two. Going back to the 2013 paper conducted in Florida, they used Multifort, which is a very, very similar rootstock to Maxifort. It's kind of like the brother of Maxifort, also very vigorous. And they found similar results with this increase of 30% in yield. And the conditions were similar, too. This was done in Florida in very sandy soils. They received about 27 centimeters of water. We had rain. We had 29 centimeters of rain. And they were only able to get that interaction between the rootstock and nitrogen rates during a very, very harsh, dry summer, where they received 15.7 centimeters of rain. So we might not really be able to see that true interaction or how well those rootstocks do until we're imposing even more stress on the plants. So just an overall conclusion from these studies, we didn't see any of the interactions between the nitrogen rate and rootstocks. Plant height differences between rootstocks were minimal, though we did notice this increase in bushiness of the plants. Marketable yield showed a linear increase with increasing nitrogen rate, due partly because we probably didn't hit that nitrogen nutritional requirement. And finally, Maxifort rootstock significantly increased marketable yield. Now, looking at that yield, in 2013, it improved by about 7,600 kilograms per hectare, and then in 2014, at about 6,500 kilograms per hectare, which is significant. But going back to the original benefit of the use of grafted plants, we have to keep in mind that whether you're organic or not, when you're dealing with a disease like this, there's a very easy potential to lose your market. If you're not producing tomatoes, you lose contracts and you lose your markets. However, with grafted tomatoes, you're able to keep production going and keep your markets. With that, I'd like to thank my advisors and committee members, as well as all those that have helped me in the 2 years, and then our funding through the USDA and Syngenta. And with that, I will take questions. Yes?
Do you see any
incidence
of bacterial wilt in your fields at all?
Good question. The question was, did we see any bacterial wilt in these fields? First, I should say, there's been no history of bacterial wilt in these fields. The fields that I showed prior were on the other part of the state. That being said, we did not see any bacterial wilt at all. And at the end of the season, we pulled up plants as well just to check for anything like root knot nematode, which is much more common in these sandy soils, but we didn't observe that either. Any other questions? Jen? I'm sorry, could you say that again? Suckered. These plants, no. We did not do, the question was, were these plants suckered? And we did not do any pruning or suckering of these plants. Yes? Sure. So the question is in regards to taking into account the healing time needed for grafting and then having the controls at the same life stage. And yes, they were. So we did the grafting. We planted the controls a week after we planted the, or I should say seeded out the grafted plants, because the healing process takes about 1 week. And so by the time that the plants, all the plants were ready to go out to the field, they were all at the same physiological stage. That being said, the rootstocks were technically 1 week older than the control plants. Yes?
I suggest you add another control, self-grafted.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. No, the comment was to add self-grafted controls. And yes, that is very valid.
What is self-grafted?
Say that again?
What is self-grafted?
So a self-grafted, the question is, what is a self-grafted plant? A self-grafted plant is where you take, for example, our control tribute, you cut the top off, and then you put the top right back on, and you heal it as if it was a regular grafted plant. So the purpose of having the self-grafted would take into account the wounding process of actually cutting the plant. Okay?
I'm not very familiar with tribute. Is that a very vigorous
Sure, sure. So the question is regarding tribute and how vigorous it is and maybe using a different scion. So tribute doesn't really appear to be a very vigorous plant, at least compared to some of the others that we've worked with. You know, we've worked with one farmer who has another determinant variety, which is Mountain Fresh, much more vigorous, and it yields a lot more than tribute. And so, yes, I do think that there also might be a difference if we put different scions on it. As well, if we start looking at, some indeterminate varieties and looking at high tunnel production, too. And that's where I think you see even more of the benefit of these more vigorous rootstocks, because you can just continually produce tomatoes a lot longer. Any other questions? All right, well, thank you.